listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days, with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the depths of the Great Depression, not a single public library in America closed its doors. Banks went under, farmers went bankrupt, millions of people were out of work and out of luck, but the American public clung to its libraries, not only because of their inherent value to our society, but also because they are symbols of community strength and hope. How lame, then, to see public officials today, from George W. Bush to city council members, reaching for the budget axe to whack library funding, forcing branches to close, valuable services to be eliminated, and hours to be cut. In a time when governments dump billions of taxpayer dollars into corporate subsidies and boondoggles, our so-called leaders are failing the people by going after these true public treasures. Check out Salinas, California, a hard-hit working-class city which is now the largest population in America without a public library. Ironically, this is the hometown of John Steinbeck, the prize-winning author of The Grapes of Wrath and other powerful works that chronicle the human spirit during the Depression years. Steinbeck knew that literature has the power to elevate the spirit and help people rise above difficult times, and it's said that he got some of his early exposure to the power of literature at the Salinas Library. Since Steinbeck's day, Salinas expanded to three branch libraries, one named after him. But now, all three have been closed by the city council, which is facing large budget deficits. This move shuts out the 1,900 people a day who count on the library for books, literacy courses, internet access, after-school programs, and other services. Also, nearly 36 employees have been shown the door. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not a Salinas story, but a failure of all public leadership. Why are they dumping billions into Bush's Star Wars boondoggle, for example? While public libraries, which provide essential services that keep America informed and enlightened, are forced to go begging.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
What is that? Is it a rat? Is it a mouse? Is it a cat? Oh no! It's a groundhog!
They say we're young and we don't know.
Yes. Thanks to Charles Boyer. I was on his show this morning in Phoenix. And he reminded me of what reminded me of what reminded me of the story that we actually read yesterday. I guess it's worth visiting again. The United States officials were surprised and heartened today at the size of the turnout in South Vietnam's presidential election, despite a Viet Cong terrorist campaign to disrupt the voting. According to reports from Saigon, 83% of the 5.8 million registered voters cast their ballots yesterday, despite threats by the Viet Cong.
I got you.
Yeah, Bill Murray's smiling somewhere. Happy Groundhog Day.
I got flowers in the spring.
Is spring coming? Well, the groundhog saw his shadow today here in Vermont. That means 6 more months of winter. Yeah, we have, well, you know, here in the People's Republic, we have 9 months of winter and 3 months of bad sledding. In 1723, Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania was first settled by the Delaware. Not first settled. It was settled at that time by the Delaware Indians and was first discovered by visitors from Europe. The name Punxsutawney comes from the Indian name for the location. Punxsutawney means town of the sand flies. Woodchuck comes from the word Wochuck, which is ancestral grandfather in the Delaware language. And do you know where this holiday comes from? It used to be called Candlemas Day, or Candlemas. It's German. Actually, it's pagan. It goes back to the celebration of Imbolc, a holiday at a deity that is not often celebrated in America, except in the context of Groundhog Day. Used to be they would place a lighted candle in the window of each home on this day. This is the day that is halfway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. And when Christianity came to Europe, the local priests would bless the candle and pass them out to people, and they'd put them in their windows. And it was a way to try and bring sunlight back. The day's weather was considered important. If the sun came out on that day, it meant 6 more weeks of wintry weather. If it didn't, that was considered a good sign. Well, you know, because clouds tend to keep... Those of you who live in the places that are incredibly snowy like this know that clouds tend to keep the temperature was warm, actually. It's when it was 20 below zero here 2 weeks ago, here in the People's Republic, it was bright and sunny because you get all this convective cooling. Welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. And welcome back. Speaking of large animals, there's a groundhog that is sound asleep, presumably. I didn't see anything around his hole this morning when I was out. Groundhog sound asleep about 20 feet from where I'm sitting right now. And by the way, and we got confirmation, by the way, on the tracks that we have along the other side of the studio here. I told you about these tracks. It looks sort of like dog tracks, but I thought they might be fox because they were in a straight line. And I got a confirmation from some folks up in Alaska who have a marvelous B&B up there. And we had printed it out, and I meant to bring it down here with me. I don't have it with me, so I will have to share that information, who and where they are, with you a little later on. And they said if the tracks are one after the, you know, straight in a straight line, as opposed to side to side, then it's a fox and not a dog. And sure enough, they are. In fact, it looks like just a continuous straight line of tracks, not two side by side, but just right straight down the middle. The fox was here. DenverChannel.com. One of the folks in our chat room actually forwarded this to me. Speaking of animals, yeah, we'll get to the inauguration address and all this painful news stuff in just a minute, but this is great. Speaking of animals, three men, this is from the DenverChannel.com, three men who thought they had rescued an injured bobcat or lynx in the middle of the highway were shocked to learn it wasn't. They were even more shocked by the side effect of their helping this animal. Let me tell you the story. The trio was driving on U.S. Highway 36 from Estes Park, Colorado, on the evening of January 26 when they spotted an injured animal in the middle of the road near Pinewood Springs. Jason Lee Laird told the Boulder Daily Camera, "It looked up to me as if to say, 'Help me!'" Jason may have been in a state of mind where lots of things were looking up at him. We'll get to that in a moment. In a moment, the three men decided to rescue the animal so it wouldn't be hit by another car and take it to a 24-hour veterinary clinic in Longmont. While Laird's friends directed traffic, he scooped up the large feline into his jacket, and the three men lifted the animal into the back of the Jeep they were driving. One of the men sat in the back seat and stroked the animal to reassure it as they drove toward Longmont. They stopped in the next town, ironically a town named Lyons, and flagged down a Boulder County Sheriff's deputy who took one look at the animal and told them they had picked up a mountain lion. Not just a mountain lion, a 65-pound mountain lion. Not just a 65-pound mountain lion, a 65-pound mountain lion that was capable of killing a deer and had been known to eat humans. Not this particular one, but, you know, it's one of the things mountain lions occasionally do. Deputy flipped out. He called the Division of Wildlife. They showed up. Took the animal off. It was so badly injured it had to be put to sleep. That's sort of the bad news. The other bad news, when the deputy was rooting around in the Jeep to protect these guys from this deadly mountain lion, he smelled pot. And so Laird says, "Hey, man, the mountain lion took a dump in the back of the Jeep." And the deputy said, and I quote, "Mountain lions don't smoke marijuana," end quote. And so Laird, 21, and Zachariah Deming, 19, were ticketed for possession of marijuana and drug paraphernalia. The DOW spokesman said the men were lucky to have survived the encounter with the mountain lion without serious injuries. Todd Malmesbury told the newspaper he'd never heard of the rescue of a mountain lion that size. Although possession of wildlife is against the law, both the men were not ticketed for that infraction, a sheriff's department spokesman said, because they were acting in good faith, and besides that, they got them on the pot charge. Oh, my. Well, he didn't look like a 65-pound cat. It's got to be. Got to be something interesting. I talked about, this is a tie, again, as I said, we will get, it's Groundhog Day. It's also, you know, it's this magical day. It's the day halfway between the winter equinox and the spring equinox. I'm telling you, it's just like George Bush declared war on Iraq on an equinox on, you know, the first day of spring. It's always these significant days, shall we say. I swear, there's an astrologer in the White House working on this stuff. Anyhow, I published a piece on common dreams yesterday, and it has already brought the Kool-Aid drinkers out of the woodwork. Truly remarkable. The article I pointed out, and we've talked about this on the air a number of times, I pointed out that corporations are increasingly paying fewer and fewer taxes. Now, corporations, and in fact, there's a competition going on in Europe, and it's got the French and the German quite flipped out, because the countries that are newly admitted to the European Union are dropping corporate income taxes. They're down to like 19% in Portugal, and I don't have the list in front of me. Anyhow, they're dropping them, as I reported on this program yesterday and the day before. And this is a big deal. It's causing a lot of conflict in the EU. And yesterday, the guy who's the head of the EU said he's not going to moderate any food fights on this thing, and he's not going to prevent people from reducing their corporate taxes, and they're not going to try and harmonize tax rates so that there isn't competition. And so, of course, what you're going to have happen is corporations moving to at least moving their headquarters to the low-tax areas to do business. And so I wrote this piece, and I said, you know, we've seen this in the United States now. Corporations are paying a smaller share of taxes now than they have, with the exception of one single year, 1983, than they have since the 1920s, which is, in the opinion of many people, what brought about the Great Depression. This teetering, tottering pile of wealth, corporate exuberance. And I pointed out that corporations make use of the commons just like you and I do. Right? I have a business, and there's me. And my corporation makes use of the commons. The little corporation of this radio program and my books, we use the rights of way that are maintained for the telephone lines and for the cable lines and the DSL line and the ISDN line and all that. We drive on public streets to get to the office supply store. I am making use of a public education. Our employees, me, Ira, Louise, Brad. Corporations make use of the commons. They make use of public services. They want police protection. They want fire protection. The really big corporations that are producing like pollution, they want the stuff cleaned up by us. Now, under Bush, used to be the Superfund sites were paid for by the polluters. Now they're paid for by the taxpayers, a gift to you and I from George W. Bush. Actually, a gift to the chemical industry. I mean, I shouldn't be sarcastic, just be straight up. The largest user of our financial infrastructure are corporations in the United States. They require a stable currency. The largest user of our court system, actually, is not the prosecution of guys who are robbing 7-Elevens, it's actually the enforcement of contracts between corporations. So, you know, our patent office, our trademark, all of this stuff, all of these commons, which are paid for with our tax dollars, used by corporations. And I pointed out that increasingly corporations are saying, we don't want to pay for this stuff. And so here I get this, I get these emails. I get this one from, he doesn't give his name or his city. It's just MRED@godsbest.com. He says, anyone who doesn't understand that all taxes are paid by consumers, no matter where they are collected, are living in la-la land. Okay. And then this other one from Dennis in Richland, Washington. He says, your column on corporate taxation ignores some simple facts. Corporations don't pay taxes. They collect taxes. Only people pay taxes. This is one of the great scams. This guy's been drinking the Kool-Aid. He's been listening to the right-wing shows. And this is their argument. You could flip this around. I could say, humans don't pay taxes. Only corporations pay taxes, because every dollar taken out of my taxes is $1 less than I can spend to buy the products of a corporation. That logic is just as good as the logic says that every dollar the corporation pays in taxes, they have to increase the product of the price, or the price of the product, so I end up paying it. They're both nonsense. But these people, they believe this stuff. I mean, they actually believe. And the reason they believe it, of course, is because huge corporations have been whacking at this thing, pounding on this thing for 20 years, trying to convince Americans that, you know, corporations shouldn't pay taxes. They should be above the law. 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
They hate me in the garden. They hate me in the yard. The life of a groundhog is awfully darn hard. Oh, they set out traps. They throw their rocks. They swerve at me with cars. But on the second day of February, suddenly, I'm a star.
Oh, isn't it sweet?
On Groundhog Day, I dress up in high style. Step out of my winter home, the crowd goes wild. Photographers are snapping, the networks all are there. They want to know the answer, like I really care.
And if you're lucky, you can even give the State of the Union address. Welcome back.
Tom Hartman here with you. Happy Groundhog Day. What can I say? It's a beautiful, bright, sunny day here in the People's Republic, meaning we have six more months of winter. February, March, April, May, June, July, August. Yeah, that's, well, we've had snowfall in May before, so maybe not 6 months. We'll see. We'll see. Anyway, I want to deconstruct this thing before I move along. This email that I got from Dennis in Richland, Washington, he says, corporations don't really pay taxes. They collect people only taxes. Only people pay taxes. To a corporation, he says, a tax is simply another cost of doing business, a cost that gets passed along to the consumer in the form of higher prices. So this is the argument that they make, which means the corporation is merely helping the government to collect taxes from you and me. I would say, if you're talking about the government deducting our payroll taxes, sure. You know, they deduct taxes from our paychecks and pass that along on behalf of us. But if we're talking about a corporation paying taxes on the profit it earns, it's a separate entity. It is an artificial person. It has an existence. It's able to sue. It's able to own land. It's able to participate in the economy. I mean, you know, it can't have babies or get married, but it, you know, see, this is the problem. They want corporate personhood. They want First Amendment rights, but then they want to say, oh no, we're just totally transparent. Sorry, it's not totally transparent. This is the popular notion that you can lighten the tax burden for ordinary people by increasing taxes on the big corporations a myth. No, it's not a myth. And in fact, history shows that as corporations carry more of the load of taxes, you reduce the load of taxes on average people. And yes, to some extent, that will be passed along in the cost of product, but it will also be passed along in a reduction in dividends paid to people who earn their living sitting around the pool, sitting on their butts waiting for the dividend check to arrive. It will also show up in a reduction of the multi-million-dollar salaries to the CEOs. It may show up in increased corporate efficiency. The corporation may have to do things in a more efficient fashion in order to be able to function and still pay taxes. He goes on to say, like other costs such as labor. Oh, in other words, corporations don't pay for labor either. You and I do. Come on. I mean, this is like other costs such as labor, this cost will vary from one country to the other. So the net effect of increasing tax on American companies is to make them less competitive with their foreign counterparts, both in our own markets and abroad. Exactly. And that's why you have tariffs to balance that out. And that's why you do things like the Democratic legislators tried to do. The reason why John Kerry voted for the $89 billion before he voted against it, or the $87 billion, whatever it was because the original bill said that if a corporation had reincorporated in the Caymans or the Bahamas or whatever, so to avoid paying corporate income tax in the United States, that they couldn't have our tax dollars to do work in Iraq. And Halliburton had done that through their KBR affiliate, Kellogg Brown and Root, which is the main contractor in Iraq. And the Democrats said, hey, if you're not going to pay taxes on the profit you make, you're not going to get our tax dollars. And of course, that went down in flames because the Republicans control the House and Senate. And they said, we don't care if these corporations don't pay taxes. He goes on to say, sure, the corporations should pay local property taxes and sales taxes to pay for the services they use, just like anyone else. But federal corporate taxes on earnings are superfluous. Oh, wait a minute. Corporations use federal services tremendously, hugely. They use the federal court system. They use our federal currency. They use the Federal Reserve System. They use our banking system. They use our interstate rights of way. They use our interstate highway system. They use our interstate air traffic control system. Corporations shouldn't pay for those, but they should pay for local property taxes. Sorry, Dennis Creswell. Sorry, Dennis. You're lost. And this, see, you've got to understand this because the conservatives have been pumping this theory out for 15 years now, and some people are actually beginning to believe it.
Love guides.
My daughter has a million things going on in her daily life, from softball to band to voice lessons. My husband and I like to make sure she doesn't spend her idle time idle, because an idle mind is a playground for trouble. You see, occupying our daughter's free time and keeping her active makes us feel confident that she won't be hanging out with the wrong crowds.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from Nashville on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days, with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. And no, it's not a train coming. It's good news. In fact, here's the very good news. We have Congressman John Conyers of Michigan with us on the line. Congressman Conyers, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, and I congratulate your program and satellite radio.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you here, and we're not only on Sirius satellite radio, but we're also on radio stations literally from California and Oregon to West Virginia and North Carolina. So, and up six now web streams, different web stations carrying as well, so it's all over. Anyhow, by the way, I had a question, just is kind of apropos of nothing, but does your the district that you represent, does that include Westland and that whole that?
It's near, but doesn't include it.
Oh, okay.
It's in that area, though.
Yeah,
I've got half Detroit and about six suburbs. Cities.
Ah, okay. I was wondering, because Louise and I lived there back in the 70s.
Is that so?
Yeah, our oldest daughter.
I claim
was,
you. That's close enough.
Okay, our oldest daughter was born in St. Mary's in Livonia, which is a little farther out even than that. But it's
right.
We were living down by Inkster Road there. Anyhow, welcome to the program. Tonight is the State of the Union Address, and the president is, it's kind of an open secret what he's going to be talking about. The main thing probably being Social Security. What's your take on what he's going to say, what the situation is, and what we should be doing about it?
Mr. Hartman, this is one of the subjects that people that want to get off easy criticism of the president have a field day. The whole notion of privatizing accounts in Social Security would be laughable, except that it has a long, tenuous history from a lot of organizations that have opposed Social Security.
Yeah.
So you see, it's kind of coming around, but just the idea of somebody's grandmother trying to pick up the Wall Street Journal and look through the stock pages and try to figure out which stock that in her own understanding would have a greater return than what the federal government itself would be able to do is laughable.
Yeah.
Except that we have the Wall Street equity managers with a big campaign going. There's a great, the president himself is deeply involved in this. But the whole idea, at a cost of $2 trillion to set up, would be disastrous. And I think many of my Republican colleagues are aware of that, and that's why another reason why I really don't think this is going to have many legs.
Yeah, you think this thing isn't going to fly?
I don't think it'll fly.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting. I know that I read a piece recently that said that what convinced Bush that this was such a brilliant idea was some years ago his meeting with one of the South American presidents. And apparently he hasn't noted that Argentina went bankrupt because they privatized their Social Security system. And in either Chile or Peru, I think it's Chile.
Chile.
One-third now of their system has been eaten up by corporate fees,
yes,
the privatized system, and it's going broke, and pensioners are losing their money. And it just doesn't work. I mean, in England, they had to put caps on how much money the banks could charge because so many people were getting ripped off. They had to put a 5% cap on it. Why should we pay 5% when the nice, boring bureaucrats of the Social Security Department do it for an average cost of about 1%?
Well, you're very well versed on this, and I think more and more people only need a few of these arguments to realize that there is a major case against changing Social Security. There is no current, real current problem. We do have a small problem that we will have to address in about, I think it's 2042, according to some of our people. Social Security financially sound through the year of 2042. But there's this malignant little idea of trying to destroy Social Security by privatizing accounts. It ends the whole concept of giving people something there, period. And we're going to now take it away.
Yeah, and I think what so many people forget is the Social Security is actually the most regressive of all our taxes because it's capped at $90,000 now this year. And mm-hmm. and this was a bone that the Democrats threw to the Republicans. The Republicans fought so hard against Social Security during Roosevelt's time back in 1935, I think it was, or 36.
Right.
And, you know, that finally it was like, well, we'll cap it off so the really rich people don't have to pay into it. So, and that's, you know, essentially how they got the thing passed. And if we just eliminated that cap so that Bill Gates was paying the same percentage of Social Security that I'm paying or that you're paying, then it would be
more than solvent.
Yeah, this is just remarkable. Before I let you go, one quick question. Last time we had you on the program, sir, and by the way, speaking of Michigan, just before, we are on the air in WSDS in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Ann Arbor.
And WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan at this moment. But I just wanted to follow up on the work that you had done on the Ohio vote. The last time we spoke, you were down there in Ohio. What is going to come out of that? Are we going to see a day in America?
Yes, we've got two bills.
Okay.
I want to commend publicly Senator Chris Dodd of Connecticut, who has introduced the Senate version of the same bill that I'm introducing today, in which we try to improve the voting process. You know, it's so sad when only a few members of Congress deal with the most basic cornerstone in the democratic system, the right to vote and to have it counted. And I've been blessed with all the congratulations and thanks that keep coming in for just doing my job. And our bill, Dodd and I and others worked on the Help America Vote Act to deal with all of the innumerable problems that came out of the Florida election.
Right.
Now we've got another bill here that deals with a number of other things, but mainly we ask a government state officials, particularly Secretary of State, to not get in the campaigns for president of people that they will be administering the vote for all the citizens. You remember, right, the Secretary of State of Florida was the campaign leader for Bush, and the Secretary of State of Ohio, Kenneth Blackwell, was the co-chair of the Bush for President in Ohio.
Right, right.
The other part is of course, to make sure there's a record, a paper trail behind every vote so we can tell what happened.
So does this bill that you're introducing today complement or go beyond Rush Holt's proposed legislation?
Well, it incorporates it.
I'm
supporting Rush Holt's bill, but what we're trying to do is make sure that we have paper trails. The whole thing is to make sure that we don't have elections in which these things are resolved orally and they're gone forever.
Yeah.
And that's what Rush Holt himself, a distinguished scientist, has been very helpful with it.
Right. And Congressman Conyers, do you know what the H.R. number will be or the Senate bill number?
I do not have our number. I think Dodd's number. On my webpage, we'll be doing a lot on it, because to me, clean and fair elections are the bedrock. That's the preliminary to anything that we're going to be doing in this country. And we weren't arguing that although 60,000 votes one way or a different way would have changed the outcome, but we weren't arguing that. We're arguing, let's make elections better. Let's have an election day that is a national holiday for voting for president.
Yeah, I mean the vote is the beating heart of democracy. We have to treat it as if it's something sacred.
How well said.
Yeah. So Congressman John Conyers, I'm assuming that your website is conyers.house.gov.
It is.
Okay, great. So people can find out more about that there. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Wonderful. Keep up the good work, and I'm glad you guys are getting all over Michigan and the rest of the country.
Well, we are, and thank you so much, sir, for being with us today, and keep up your great work.
You are
a true patriot. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye now. It's 17 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ann in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Ann, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Something Senator Conyers just said that is something I totally agree with, that we're not going to be able to fix anything, including these runaway corporations and things like that, until we get the elections to where they're fair and unbiased and not tampered with.
Or not tamperable. Yes, absolutely.
Correct.
Absolutely. This is the problem underneath all the other problems, in my opinion.
Because there's just too many things, and it's Florida as well as Michigan. I know Florida wasn't their eyes weren't on Florida this time, but there was a lot of shenanigans going on in Florida and it was mainly absentee ballots, which a lot of Democrats were doing because they were afraid their vote wasn't going to get counted with these machines, you know, the computer count, paperless trail. So they were doing absentee ballots, and things happened to the ballots, and they didn't get counted, or they got stuck aside. All sorts of stuff happened.
Yeah.
And
Not to mention that some 50,000 of them didn't get mailed out in Broward County. You know, there was that problem as well.
or they got mailed out later, supposedly disappeared in the mail.
Yeah.
I had that happen to myself and my husband, actually.
Yeah.
One of us got ours, the other one didn't.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the reason I was calling was talking about corporations and taxing corporations. The main thing is we're not going to be able to do anything about making corporations pay taxes and do it in a fair manner until we deal with some of the legislation that's given the corporations all these tax breaks that move offshore, that allows them to move jobs offshore, because they aren't going to take that money that they have to pay in corporate taxes, income taxes, away from the executives and the CEOs. They're going to hit the little guy at the bottom. Did you see that about that some of these fast food places like Hardee's and some of these others are now having so that their window, when you order, that the you're not actually talking to a person that's inside the building. It's a person someplace else.
You're talking to somebody in India.
Yeah, where
yeah.
minimum wage or less so that they don't have to pay so much.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. They're not in India. They're centralizing them in the state. That's right. You're speaking to somebody someplace else.
Well,
yeah.
Actually not in the state. What they're doing, like in California and Missouri, is they're putting it in people who have a lower minimum wage at states and doing a central place there. So so don't think they won't think about moving them offshore if they can get away with it.
Sure. Yeah, it's the ongoing general insanity, and thanks a lot for calling and raising the issue. It's an important one, and I do appreciate it. This is the problem here is that this is not going to be addressed until we the people once again begin to involve ourselves in politics. And I don't mean this in the context of let's blame the victims. Oh, it's all our fault. I'm not saying that, because certainly what has happened is that the laws have been rigged in many ways. I mean, starting with Supreme Court decisions like Boston versus Bilotti, and on. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, going all the way back to Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad in 1886, but Boston v. Bilotti in 1978, a big one. A series of Supreme Court decisions that have given more and more power to corporations. But on top of that, you have the fact that corporations are incredibly politically active. $2 billion a year is spent by corporate powers in Washington, D.C. to lobby members of Congress. $2 billion a year. And to counter that, we have to get active, because we have a situation right now where your voice and my voice are not being heard on Capitol Hill. And there are just a very small number of members of Congress, John Conyers and Bernie Sanders among them, who are actually listening to their constituents and reacting to them. And you've got this huge majority, certainly the entire Republican Party, as far as I can tell, with the possible exception of a few Republicans of integrity, like Ron Paul, who I disagree with on many issues. But the guy has a philosophical framework that he's consistent with. But the vast majority of our members of Congress now have just had to, as a result of the way our campaign finance laws are set up, and as a result of the fact that we, the people, are not paying enough attention to these issues, have had to just kind of roll over and get in bed with the corporation. And the result is that the majority of legislation right now in the United States is being written by corporate lawyers, not by our elected people. Jeff in Chicago, what are your thoughts on this? Hey, Jeff.
Hi, this is the first time I heard the show, but I own my own business. I employ 150 people.
Good on you.
I own a truck company.
That's great.
The reason why I'm driving one today, I had a man yesterday, been with me 10 years, and he told me no, and I said, well, I hit the door.
Uh-huh.
Sir, when I first started my company 15 years ago, there was times where I had to go to the bank and borrow money to make my payroll. I had four kids.
I have done the same thing, Jeff. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Now, as for taxation and regulation, all I know about my men is that when I'm doing well, fuel prices are low, whatever, I always spread the wealth among my men. My men average $60,000 a year, and it costs me $680 a month per employee for health insurance, which is ridiculous.
I agree.
And
what's your point,
Jeff?
I
agree. If they increase my taxes on my business, I can't give my employees a raise.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with that, Jeff. However, you as a company, your company, to the extent that you're making use of the commons. The extent that you're making use of the roads, you're paying taxes on through your fuel taxes. To the extent that you're making use of the court system, you should be paying for those things. So should I as a business owner. We both have to do it. Jeff, we're out of time. I'm sorry, but I appreciate the call.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The freezing temperatures of a cold winter can give a big boost to groundwater in the spring. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A typical winter across the northern United States and Canada might include long stretches of temperatures below freezing. In the spring, the soil will thaw and the snow will melt and seep into it. That situation is much different when winter weather bounces above and below freezing, and those warmer winters can lead to flooding and soil erosion. Jamie Douglas is a Ph.D. candidate in engineering at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She works with environmental engineers to study how winter weather patterns relate to snowmelt in the spring and the way that moisture seeps into groundwater. Douglas says some winters have cycles where temperatures go up, the snow melts, and then temperatures drop below freezing again. She says the moisture freezes in the ground just below the surface. The result is a layer of soil that's hard as concrete, and moisture runs off it instead of sinking into it. Douglas says when the soil is thoroughly frozen, the snow melt at the end of the winter and the spring rain can cause erosion and even flooding.
In general, people think that infiltration is preferable to runoff because you're not causing any sort of erosion, and the infiltration is going down to become groundwater, and then you're not going to have the flood. What we get a lot of times in spring is big storms, so you're raining on frozen ground, and all that water just runs off. Well, that can flood streams, so it can be a flooding issue, too. The more of that water that you can get into the ground, the better off you are.
Douglas is working on a project to monitor the way melting snow infiltrates into soil across northern Wisconsin. She says the results will help scientists predict groundwater conditions in the future based on winter weather. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And here's something else for Jeff in Chicago. I'm hoping you're still listening, Jeff. We ran up against the break, and there's just no way around that. But in any case, here we have multinational corporations based in the United States. You want to know who's really responsible for driving your taxes up? You've got corporations like Halliburton that are making use of our military to protect international business activity and even pave the way for it, and paying no federal income taxes whatsoever. So the small guy, the small and the medium-sized businesses in America get screwed. Their taxes go up. Taxes on average people go up. And Halliburton, or at least their offshore division, KBR, that does all the contracting in Iraq, or most of it, goes just dancing off paying no taxes, no federal taxes whatsoever, because they reincorporated in Bermuda or the Cayman Islands or wherever it is. This is a crime. Gary in Iowa is on the line. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hey, what I don't hear a lot about, and I'd like to hear more about, is this idea of these instant runoff elections.
Instant runoff voting, right, IRV.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, because that way they've got all the candidates out there all at once, then it's harder for them to play dirty politics. And
yeah, no, it's great. IRV really opens up democracy. They've been doing it for 15 years or more in Australia and in New Zealand, and we have almost 300 communities in the United States that have it. San Francisco is probably the largest where they have IRV. And the main party that's promoting this is the Green Party, and I encourage you to get in touch with your local Greens and ask how you can help. This is the kind of thing that has to grow from the ground up. My guess is that when a couple of thousand communities across the United States have instant runoff voting, so that it becomes so familiar to so many people, it'll hit a critical mass and boom, we'll go national with it. But it has to be done locally, and the Greens are the ones doing that. Gary, thanks for the call. I got to move along here. We're up against the edge of the hour, and Tom in Minneapolis is on the line. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to comment quickly on a couple of these right-wing Kool-Aid drinkers who are calling you and sending you emails, and they're spouting this gobbledygook. That trucker guy who complained he can't pay his guys because of high taxes. Well, I as an individual can say, well, I can't pay my rent since they raised my taxes, but are you going to cut me off here?
Well, we've got about 30 seconds, 20 seconds.
Cool. I just wanted to say the root of all this confusion here is this conflating of democracy and capitalism.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the bottom line. Democracy and capitalism are different things.
The political system promotes wealth distribution, and capitalism is an economic system that promotes wealth laudation or wealth concentration.
Wealth concentration, right.
It's a good book, Wealth and Democracy by Kevin Phillips.
Yeah, it's a brilliant book. Kevin Phillips, and it's not the only one he's written on that topic. It's excellent.
A Republican.
Yeah, and you should read the last chapter in particular. Tom from Minneapolis, thanks for the call. It's Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days, with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Credit card companies love you. Giants like Citibank, Chase Manhattan, and MBNA constantly fill our mailboxes with little love letters, wooing us to accept their cards. But, like so many love affairs, once you've signed up, the companies suddenly show an ugly, grasping, selfish side of their personality. What you learn is that credit firms seem to enjoy penalizing their customers. For example, I recently paid a monthly bill of about $1,000 on an MBNA card, but I accidentally wrote a check that was $10 short. The next month, MBNA hit me for an interest finance charge of $21. That's an interest of more than 200% on a $10 debt. Oh, they calmly explained when I called. We don't just assess the penalty on the amount you were short, but on the entire $1,000 that you owed for the month, even though you already had paid $990 of it. Check the fine print of your agreement, they said, lovingly. Perhaps you, like me, try to pay your balance in full each month to avoid such usurious interest rates. But now they've invented a most unloving trick. Most of us assume that our bills are not due until 30 days after we get them in the mail. The banks, however, have oh so quietly shrunk this common grace period to 20 days or less. Also, Citibank and MBNA are among those that now include sneaky fine print specifying an hour that your payment is due, say 1 p.m. on the 20th. Miss it by a minute, and they can whack you with a late fee of up to $39, plus penalty interest rates as high as 30%, even though you think you paid your bill on time and in full. This is Jim Hightower saying, they stiff their own customers because it's hugely profitable. Credit card banks collected nearly $15 billion from us in penalty fees last year. To fight back, call U.S. PIRG, 212-546-9707.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
How is it, they ask in the chat room, that John Stossel is able to be on 2020 promoting a right-wing agenda when there's no corresponding liberal voice on the air? Well, that's a song we've heard before. Welcome back, friends. It's Groundhog Day! Whoa!
They say we're young and we don't know. Won't find out.
The computer is not handling this well. There we go.
Well, I don't know. Well, that's true.
Must be something somebody in the chat room said. It's the same computer handling the music. Oh, boy, that's it. Okay, I'm sorry. Sonny and Sherry, you guys are out of here. We just can't have that. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you on Groundhog Day, inaugural address day. George W. going to go on TV tonight, and just like he lied to us about the war in Iraq, and there's all those weapons of mass destruction over there and all that other stuff, you can expect more of the same tonight, my opinion. We will see, in my humble opinion. I hope I am wrong. It would be just absolutely wonderful to hear him actually go on the air and speak truth. I mean, it really, really would. I genuinely believe that. I think it would just be a marvelous thing if George Bush would go on TV and say some things that are demonstrably truthful. But, you know, there's this small problem that when you look back at past behavior, it's not quite what you see. It's just not quite what
you
see.
As a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction, to cease all development of such weapons, and to stop all support for terrorist groups. All of those obligations. It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons.
Oh, my goodness. It's a...
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Yeah. Well, are we going to...
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Just visiting earlier comments here.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons and is capable of killing millions. We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
And they even have a balsa wood toy airplane.
Iraq possesses ballistic missiles with a likely range of hundreds of miles, far enough to strike Saudi Arabia, Israel, Turkey, and other nations, in a region where more than 135,000 American civilians and service members live and work. We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles.
Well, there was one of them.
It could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas.
Actually, it's a balsa wood model.
We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States.
Targeting the United States. This is why we're in Iraq, you will recall.
Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
So what sort of similar language are we going to be hearing tonight? We shall see. Let me go back to the mailbag here. It's absolutely remarkable, some of the stuff. A lot of it is just too obscene to read on the air. But some of it is, reasonably semi-coherent. This from gadget5.rm at rocketmail.com. He says, I stumbled upon your article this morning. This is the article called First They Came for the Terrorists. My article about Alberto Gonzalez and how we are setting up concentration camps. And now we have five of them, the Bush administration asking money for the sixth in Cuba. And none of these people have been charged with a crime. And in fact, a number of them have been released. Recently, we discovered that a lot of them were rounded up because when we were in Afghanistan, we were offering bounties for terrorists. And people were settling scores with old enemies and just trying to make money, saying, hey, that guy over there, he's a terrorist. Get him. And this may constitute perhaps even a majority of the people. But no matter what, none of these people have had a trial, so we don't know legally if they are guilty or not. If they are, then they certainly should be punished, particularly if they were planning on attacking the United States. But what if they were simply warriors within their own nation? I mean, keep in mind, it wasn't Afghanistan that blew up the towers. It was Osama bin Laden, and he got away. But in any case, here, I got this email from Mark. He says, I stumbled upon your article this morning. You compare the current holding of terrorists in Cuba to the concentration camps during World War II and after. I still cannot understand how you can compare holding actual terrorists that deliberately choose to use hate, violence, and terrorism against our country. As I said, if anybody is convicted of that, I absolutely support putting them in jail. Anyhow, he says, how can you compare such people and our people to the innocent people put in concentration camps during the war? Well, the comparison isn't between the people. The comparison was to the process. In both cases, people were locked up without access to a lawyer, without access to the courts, without access to due process, without access to a judge, without access to a jury of their peers, all of which are required by the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of the United States. And it doesn't just say only for citizens of the United States, by the way. It says all persons. He goes on to say, here you are comparing innocents to guilty terrorists, and I am flabbergasted. Well, I can tell you it is a shame and a sin what you are doing and saying. May the Lord have mercy on your soul, Mark. Well, I hope, Mark, I honestly and truly hope, I do not mean this sarcastically, that the Lord does have mercy on my soul. It certainly needs it. However, not for this. In this regard, I am convinced that any of the patriarchs and Jesus, any of his, all would agree with me that if somebody has not been convicted of a crime, they should be considered innocent until convicted. And none of these people, see, it's the process that I'm criticizing. But it's just remarkable to me, the myopia of some folks. Anyhow, welcome back to the program. If I neglected to say that at the top of the hour, I suspect perhaps I did. Oh no, we had the music. That's right. You hear another? Here's another one. This is from Joseph in Las Vegas. He says, "This is actually a friendly one." He says, "Hey there, Tom. We hear you talk about economics and the dangers that we face in a current neoconservative financial mismanagement. I'd just like you to elaborate on what an actual depression would look like. Or what should we expect from one? What might the value of the dollar be? What would employment possibly look like? How do we as a nation dig ourselves out of one?" And this is a tough one. You know, making predictions like that is a very difficult thing to do. What we do know is that nations that go massively into debt eventually go broke. You know, this is the basic rule that an unsustainable course will not be sustained. It's a rule of mathematics, physics, chemistry, politics. And here George W. is running up the largest debts in history, and you've got Dick Cheney saying, and I quote, "Ronald Reagan taught us," actually he has a much lower voice, "Ronald Reagan told us that deficits don't matter." Not the best Cheney imitation, but anyhow. Reagan taught us that deficits don't matter. Yeah, right. One of the reasons why we're having so many problems right now, aside from the insane tax cuts for the rich that Bush passed, which really were not tax cuts, they were tax deferrals. In other words, he borrowed from our grandchildren to give money back to rich people right now. One of the reasons that we're having such a problem with this is that this year we're having to spend $160 billion. That's a mind-boggling amount of money. That's enough to put every college student in the United States through college for free. We're spending that much money this year on interest on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up so that he could make 1984 look like a good year and get himself reelected. And Bush is doing the exact same thing. Spend like a drunken sailor, borrow from your children and your grandchildren. And the result of Reagan doing it was that the last 5 years of his presidency, he had to raise taxes every year. George Herbert Walker Bush had to raise taxes. Bill Clinton had to raise taxes until we got to the point where actually we were back in balance and prosperity returned. What a surprise. But this kind of behavior will lead to a disaster, and it may be a very unpleasant one. First of all, in direct answer to your question, Joseph, the last bubble which has not yet burst is the housing bubble. We've seen housing prices go up dramatically in the last 10, 15 years, particularly in the last 5 years or so, in some part because Alan Greenspan has been working so hard to get George W. Bush reelected. He gave us actually for 3 years negative interest rates. You could borrow money and spend it and pay less interest than the rate of inflation if you were a large multinational corporation or a bank. And those negative interest rates, the result of those negative interest rates was that the interest rates on mortgages were so low that house payments went down. And so, you know, people buy houses based on how much they can afford to pay every month, not on what the price of the house is. And so prices started going up. And they went up dramatically compared to inflation. Well, they're going to come back down again. We've been here before. We saw this movie back in the 1970s when they tried to do the same thing, Nixon and LBJ and Nixon financing the Vietnam War by borrowing. And it brought us the hyperinflation of the Nixon era and then the stagflation that Jimmy Carter inherited from that. We've seen this movie before, and it's coming. And let's hope that that's as bad as it gets, because if it gets really, if the currency gets coming, if the rest of the world abandons the U.S. dollar and goes to the euro, and if the Arab world goes to the gold standard, to the gold riad, which they're talking about, then we could see a situation like Germany had in the 1920s, where over a course of, you know, where literally every day the prices on things go up, where it costs $1 million to buy a loaf of bread after a year or two of that. And that is not a situation that I think any of us would want to see. That, of course, led directly to Adolf Hitler. A disaster. This is conservative economic policies destroying our country. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
We'll be right back.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Tomorrow's just another day. I'll go back to hibernating in that boring groundhog way. Smelling like a groundhog, dreaming groundhog dreams. Even worldwide fame is much more fragile than it seems.
Oh! Yes, it's Groundhog Day. The groundhog is going to stick his head up and give a State of the Union address. 25 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the Republican National Committee. It's time for a report from Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line. Hey, Ellen, what's happening in Washington today?
Well, it's interesting. The governors had a pre-rebuttal call today and for the State of the Union, and essentially they are up in arms about several issues. One of the issues that Governor Richardson from New Mexico, who is chairman of the Governors Association, Democratic Governors Association, brought up is that they're very upset about the fact that they may choose that they don't want something used for mining or for drilling oil, but the federal government can say, hey, sorry, we don't care if it's in your state, we're going to do it.
It's like the loss of states' rights.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, as you know, Republican states' rights are always good when they want them, but when the states want them, forget it. And the other thing was a question I asked that I think I well, I didn't say to you in the because I was at the White House yesterday in Victoria. We were having a briefing as this was going on. But one of the interesting things is that here, the Medicare system is really slated to go broke. 20 years, the Medicare Trust Fund, 20 years before the Social Security is even, you know, even anybody questions it. And Bush doesn't care about that. So they're very upset, the governors, not only about Medicare, but Medicaid, which they said the Bush administration just is not working with them.
Medicaid is in crisis right now.
I mean, big crisis. And they're saying, hey, look, we've got to deal with a crisis today. And he can be talking about Social Security all he wants. And, I mean, they clearly are in the camp. And this was Governor Granholm of Michigan and, of course, the Vilsack of Iowa and the new governor of Montana, who's a Democrat. And they're basically saying, well, Bush is doing this. He's doing this to get his you know, people behind him, to get the young vote behind him, and to get, of course, more money into the private sector.
Well, and particularly the banking industry, which turned, you know, the oil and chemical industries were the largest Republican contributors in the 2000 election, and they got a rack. And the banking industries were at the top of the Republican donors in the 2004 elections. And so it's payback time.
Well, it's payback time, big time. One of the questions that was asked yesterday at the White House is, what does the president have to say about the fact that the right is now saying they will not support him on Social Security unless he brings up the gay marriage amendment?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We reported on that a few days ago. It's not the
entire
right.
And the White House just would say, well, you know, the president is going to get his agenda. I mean, their usual not answering the question.
Yeah, yeah. They have made this Faustian deal. They've made a deal with the devil, and they thought that they could, you know, that the devil would just go away. But I'll tell you, you know, Paul Weyrich and these guys, these dominionists, these folks who believe and really and truly believe that the Ten Commandments, that the Bible should replace the Constitution. And this is one of the reasons why they're trying to get the Ten Commandments in all the federal courthouses and federal buildings. Nobody's
you know,
arguing that the Constitution.
Who's that guy, Russ, who writes, he used to write Ari and Me on Buzzflash?
Yeah, yeah, Russell Mokaber.
Yeah. So Russell was in the briefing yesterday, and he said, well, does the administration have anything to say about the fact that you're now trying to get there's an amicus brief from the Justice Department saying that it's okay to have the Ten Commandments in the courthouses, and what does that have to do given that the commandments say thou shalt not kill in the Vietnam War? And all that Scott would say is, next question.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering why these guys aren't saying, let's post the Constitution and Bill of Rights in the courthouses. I mean, if you're going to post something that is the holy document of the
somebody
nation,
somebody might actually have to read them, Tom.
Yeah, well, okay, let's not go there, Ellen. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
I do appreciate it. Always great to hear from you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 29 minutes past the hour. You're in the Truth Arena, the place
where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed 2 formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom in St. Paul sends me a note. He says, explain this to your listeners, please.
Hey, where did we go?
Not that.
Days when the rains came.
Some music is just so good.
Down in the hollow, playing a new game. Laughing and running, hey, hey. Skipping and jumping.
Yes, indeed.
In the misty morning fog with, oh, my heart's thumping in you, my brown-eyed girl.
I'm sorry, I'm an absolute junkie for Van Morrison. Welcome back. Welcome back. He says, really, 25% of Americans live in poverty. Most Europeans would consider the $14,000 threshold with four people a joke. Double it to $28,000 for a family of four, and Europeans would still classify this group as poor. Just like our fraudulent 5% unemployment rate. It's really 10% when one counts those millions of people who are no longer collect unemployment. Germany plays unemployment for 2 years. Therefore, they are counted. Here in the USA, you don't count after 6 months when you no longer collect. Pass it along. Okay. Done. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website. If you want to drop into our live chat room, just click on chat, live chat there on the homepage. It'll take you to it. And let's go to the phones. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, how could I reframe this question to my nephew? He's 28 years old, and he honestly believes that George W. Bush is interested in the Social Security and his children and him and his grandchildren.
Right.
And I keep trying to tell him, how can he be so interested in his children and grandchildren when he's not interested in the deficit?
Yeah.
And yet Social Security, we're interested.
Yeah. Here's I think, the way to frame it for young people, Ed, because the problem is that George is actually getting a lot of traction with young people because he's convinced them that, I mean, the reality, there is a certain truth to the fact that if you start putting money away when you're in your 20s, you'll have a fair amount of money when you get into your 50s or 60s. Money, yeah, even if you put it in a savings account, you know, money compounds and grows over time. So in my mind, here's the big question. We already have tax-deferred savings accounts for our retirement. We already have these programs. We have 401ks, we have IRAs, we have SEP accounts. We already have, you know, the government has already put into place opportunities for people in their 20s to save money. And they don't have the $1,000 a year limit that Bush wants to put on the Social Security. But those programs, if you don't pay into them, say you have a bad year and you decide you can use the money that year instead, and you don't pay into them, somebody isn't going to come with a gun and put you in jail. The program that Bush is proposing, if you decide that you don't want to pay into your retirement fund and send that money to Charles Schwab and, you know, or whoever, you know, Merrill Lynch or whatever,
yeah.
If you decide you don't want to pay into it, they will come and take you away. Now, why would it be that George W. Bush wants to force you to give your money to Wall Street at the barrel of a gun? Isn't it okay for us to have voluntary retirement programs like we have with 401ks and SEPs and IRAs and an insurance program for those people who really and truly fall in hard times through no fault of their own? For people who, you know, for people, children who lose their parents, for people who have, you know, who are disabled for the rest of their lives, and for the elderly who as try as hard as they may, they were working at Enron and Ken Lay took their pension. I'm sorry, it's gone. And so there has to be a safety net. So why should we, you know, the safety net in the insurance program being mandatory, that makes a certain amount of sense because that's going to benefit all of us. But a retirement program, why would you want a retirement program to be enforced by the force of law?
Yeah, I agree with you.
And that's a question that I think that a lot of young people, and particularly libertarians and true conservatives, will perk up their ears when they hear you say it. Because that's what Bush is proposing. What Bush is proposing is that we diminish the effectiveness and value of our insurance program and replace it with a mandatory retirement program enforced by guns and jails. And we already have insurance. We already have retirement programs. And he's risking endangering our national insurance program, which has been working very well. Thank you very much. And when you split the two, see that, and the Democrats are trying to say this, but they're saying it in an incompetent and inarticulate way. I've heard three or four Democrats in the last week or so on national TV shows saying, we have no problem with a national savings plan, but let's make it separate from Social Security. You know, let's have that debate. Should we have a national retirement program that is mandatory, as opposed to 401ks and SEPs and IRAs that are not mandatory? Should we have one that's mandatory? That's a legitimate national debate. But that's not what Bush is talking about. What Bush is talking about is reducing the insurance program. You know, your 28-year-old nephew, what happens when he becomes 35, if he falls off the roof of his house putting up Christmas tree decorations or something and breaks his neck and has to live on Social Security for the rest of his life, but George has cut it in half to be able to pay for, you know, to have money available for people who are, you know, to have private investment accounts?
Yeah, he's already had cancer.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I mean, if he becomes disabled, he's going to want an insurance program, not a retirement program. Bush wants to do away with the insurance program, and he wants to diminish it. We're talking about cuts maybe as much as 50%, and he wants to replace that chunk of it that he's diminishing with a retirement program, which, you know, if people want to have retirement programs right now, they can have them. And, you know, but this is a mandatory one. I'm starting to get redundant, so I'm going to stop there. But that's my argument, Ed.
I agree with you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Number two, Phil in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Phil.
Before I get into my comments, I just want your listeners to know that if you have an opposing point of view and you call Rush Limbaugh, you don't get on.
Well, that's interesting, because if you have an opposing point of view to me, I'll put you on first.
Yeah, I just happened to get through about 2 weeks ago, and I wanted to provide an opposing point of view when he was beating up Dan Rather. Because basically what Dan Rather's issue did was he framed a guilty man. But in any event, I want you all to realize that they believe in free speech. They believe that everyone has the right to agree with Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, well, that's always been the case. I mean, they've always screened calls there. And occasionally they will let somebody through who disagrees with him, who hasn't fooled. Well, occasionally they do it by mistake, but occasionally they do it intentionally. And those are the ones who have, you know, very thick accents or are mumbling or incoherent or inarticulate so that they can make fun of them.
Right.
But that's it. And the same thing is true of Hannity's program and most of the others. On this program, though, I just want to say, you know, when Ira answers the phone, he asks for people's name and city, and that's it.
That's right.
And occasionally people will call and say, you know, Harmony's a Nazi, Sarah. And Ira will come in and say, oh, you got somebody who's really upset. I will put them on first.
Right. Well, let me go to my point. We're talking about this issue of torture and saving American lives, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If you look, these people have no historical knowledge at all.
You're talking about now in the context of the confirmation hearings for Gonzalez and all this.
Yeah, and everyone is defending our necessity to, you know, to torture these terrible whatever you want to call them. In any event, if any of these idiots got beyond the 11th grade, they would know that a guy by the name of Rudolf Hess, who was the third person in the German administration of Adolf Hitler, came to Britain on he was going to try to get the English to surrender or whatever. Anyway, he became a captive of the British government, the Allies, obviously, in the early part of the war. Did they torture him?
No, they put him in prison in Berlin. And
That was after the war.
Yeah, after the war,
well,
yeah.
My point is, while he was in England, did they torture him?
No.
Well, why not? Didn't they want to save British lives? Didn't they want to save American lives?
Yeah.
Didn't they want to save Canadian lives?
No, we did not. And World War II was a new kind of war, and because literally tens of millions of people died in it. And no, we never had to resort to torture in World War II because for the very simple reason that we did not want our people, our soldiers, to be subject to torture if they were taken prisoner.
A movie everyone should review if you got Netflix or whatever and you want to see it. It's called Is Paris Burning? And it's about the French underground attacking the occupation forces in Germany, in France, the German soldiers.
Right.
And them, they were throwing firebombs at the Germans. They were putting bombs in train tracks. They were doing everything that's going on in Iraq.
Sure.
Okay. And the Germans felt that they were justified in torturing the French because the French were not in uniform.
That's right.
They were terrorists. In fact, you're probably old enough to remember an old TV series that's still shown on TV that I watch called Combat. Remember that?
I don't.
Well, anyway,
I may just not have, not, you know, I didn't watch a lot of TV when I was little. But.
Okay, it was on in the 1960s.
Yeah.
In any event, I'll tell you real quick, there's an episode, and the American soldiers are traveling with two French underground people, and they get captured. And the German general says to the French underground, she says, you know, you guys are terrorists. I can have you shot. That's what they considered them as terrorists.
Yeah.
But my neighbor, who's 84 years old, he was in the army during the war, and he said he was involved. He was a lieutenant, and he was involved in interrogation of German officers. He said, we didn't torture them. We treated them well because we wanted them to cooperate.
Yeah, and to some extent that happened. By the way, since you invoked the name of Rudolf Hess,
yeah,
let me share with you, Phil, the first time that the word homeland was brought into the general lexicon in Germany. Now, you know when the word homeland was first brought into the general lexicon in the United States?
With Bush.
It was right after 9/11.
Yeah.
It was right after 9/11. Bush suddenly started, and prior to that, we had, this was a word that was very shocking, actually, and it's kind of jarring to most of us, because we'd never heard the word homeland here in the United States before. It had always been the domestic policy, national policy, the United States of America, and all that. And homeland was a word that was a big word among the Zionists, among the back in the 1920s and 1930s, among the Jews in Europe who wanted to have Israel, who wanted to have a separate homeland. And Hitler was a big student of that. He writes about it in Mein Kampf. And he thought that to create a German sense of identity, he wanted to do what the Zionists were doing. He wanted to talk about a homeland. The whole Nazi thing was about blood and soil. The
right.
German, defining the Germans as a race separate
right.
from the French, for example, which, doesn't make any sense. But this was Hitler's thing. And so he rolled out this word homeland, Heimat. Is the word. Listen for Heimat. Here's Rudolf Hess saying, first of all, he says, thanks to the Führer, für Dank für der Führer, and the Germany now will be a homeland for Germans from all over the world. Alles über die Welt. And here, Rudolf Hess.
Dank Ihrer Führung wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen, Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein für alle Deutschen der Welt. Alle Hitler! Sieg Höhl! Sieg Höhl! Sieg Höhl!
That was the Nuremberg rallies, 1930, what was it, 34, the Nuremberg rallies, I believe, or 37?
Well,
anyway.
One other thing I want to mention about this election in Iraq. You know, I don't think any of these right-wing talking heads can tell you one person who was on that ballot.
Yeah, well, I think you can understand that to a certain point, because there really was a bad security situation in
Iraq. Okay, but my point is this. They could have put Dr. Joseph Mengele on that ballot, and he would have gotten votes, because these people had no idea who they were voting for.
Yeah, Phil, I'll give you that, and I got to say, we can pick it apart. It's a beginning, and I just don't think, and Phil, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. I just don't think that we can take the position that absolutely everything that happens just because George Bush did it is bad. I think it's a wonderful thing that the elections were held. That said, they were held imperfectly, and there were a lot of problems, the whole food card thing, this, that, and the other thing. And the reality, just like the 9/11 Commission, it was a great thing that there was a 9/11 Commission. Again, it was done imperfectly. But Bush opposed the 9/11 Commission. Bush opposed the elections. The elections were forced on him by Sistani. So, at some level, I suppose you have to give Bush credit for having done the elections, but also keep in mind that they were done over the strong objections of the Bush administration. Dale in Nebraska is on the line. Hey, Dale, welcome to the program.
How are you, Tom?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, the reason I'm calling is just several comments.
Sure.
One is, I was watching television last night, and I was watching a public broadcast channel, and they did a special on what they call Frontline, and the subject was the secret history of the credit card.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not.
Startling. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Startling. They even had Elliot Spitzer on talking about how the federal government's trying to take control away from the state, and how individuals, of course, the laymen that don't have a law degree in contract law are totally unable to understand what it is they're getting into with these charge cards.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the most profitable areas for banks, and it's just a huge scam.
Did they talk
about the roots of credit back with radio in the 1920s?
Well, they didn't go that far back, but what they did discuss was out in my part of the country, where it really had its roots as far as being able to charge beyond the customary usury laws.
That's right, in Nebraska.
It was South Dakota.
Or Kansas, wasn't it? Oh, South Dakota, okay.
Was where
had
its...
Right, which is where MBNA is headquartered still,
and many
other banks. Yeah.
And the thing that most people, in fact, almost nobody realizes is if you, of course, so many people pay on payments, and if you're late on one other payment, let's say a car payment, by 10 days, that goes into the FICO score, and that triggers the charge card to where they can immediately, after 15 days' notice, they can raise the interest rates unbelievably on the people.
Right. In other words, if you're late on paying your American Express bill, which is not even a credit card, it's a charge card. Then, and you're late on that, then they can actually raise the amount on your credit cards. They can also, by the way, in some states and with some contracts, they can change your home mortgage rate interests.
Absolutely.
They can change your car payment interests.
www.pbs.org.
PBS.org. Okay, I'll check it out.
Go to it.
Okay, I'll check it out. Dale, thanks for the tip. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Yes, indeed. Viagra for your brain. The Tom Hartman Program. I'm Tom Hartman.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Open spaces are dangerous places for some amphibians, and they might need to be protected in captivity. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A major report on amphibians says hundreds of species around the world are headed toward extinction, and disease is a big part of the problem. To save amphibians, people might need to take unprecedented action to control disease in the wild and to breed amphibians in captivity. Simon Stewart is a biologist with the World Conservation Union, and he directed the Global Amphibian Assessment. Stewart says amphibians are under severe stress from climate change, chemical contamination, and loss of habitat. He says the stress appears to make them more vulnerable to a widespread and deadly disease that's caused by a fungus. Stewart says more research is needed on amphibians, but research is not enough. He says we need to create sanctuaries for these creatures, and we need to keep them free of the fungal disease. For some species, captive breeding might be the only way to save them from extinction.
until we get a grip of managing this disease in the wild, we really run the risk of losing hundreds of species. It's for that reason that we're advocating both doing the research on the species and bringing quite a few of the species that we really might lose or are really close to the edge into captivity so that we buy time, so we can learn about these species, we can look after them and rebuild their populations a bit in captivity so that reintroductions can be done once we have some controlled areas in the wild which can be maintained disease-free.
Stewart says a major commitment to breeding in captivity and habitat protection in the wild would go a long way to protecting amphibians and bringing them back from the brink of extinction. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I was making my way through the wasteland. The road into town passes through. I was changing the radio station with my mind on you.
Al Stewart. I was just this weekend playing Al Stewart's The Road to Riyadh. If there's one album that will just drop your jaw, it is The Best of Al Stewart. It's probably on others, but The Best of Al Stewart album. And he's got this cut of Nostradamus and The Road to Riyadh. And it must have been recorded a decade ago. And it's about what's going on right now. And he quotes from Nostradamus. And it is absolutely mind-boggling. Al Stewart. Anyhow, Jerry in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Hey, yesterday you were ending your show with talking about the tort reform and that.
I don't recall, but
okay.
Well have.
Yeah, it's, about how you can maybe get a maximum $250,000.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, if anybody wants to argue about that, we got a senator here in Pennsylvania. I'm sure you're familiar with him, Rick Santorum.
Yeah, he's probably going to be running for president in 4 years.
Yeah, probably, and, he jumps on the bandwagon of all this stuff. But you could check this out. About 4 or 5 years ago, his wife successfully sued a chiropractor for supposedly causing her some problems. And he got, some people say it was a minimum of $350,000, but it was closer to $500,000.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, and, when people want to talk to him about that, when he starts on this tort reform, he doesn't want to talk about it.
Don't
do what I did, but do what I say.
Right, right.
And like you said yesterday, these states that enact this, the insurance doesn't go down.
No, it doesn't. In fact, it continues to go up. And the reason, what people don't get is that the reason why malpractice insurance premiums have exploded in the last 3 years is because the stock market collapsed.
Right.
These insurance companies, the way insurance works, just like Social Security insurance right now, is you accumulate a whole pile of money. And then you pay out claims from that pile of money. Well, you got a huge pile of money you're sitting on. You have to invest it in someplace. And
yeah.
The insurance companies, when the dot-com boom was happening, had all invested just incredibly in the stock market. And the upshot of that was that when the stock market collapsed, the insurance companies collapsed, or, they lost a lot of equity. They had to make it back by raising premiums. It's pure, this is not a secret. Jerry, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. I mean, this is not a secret. This is just right out there for anybody to find. There's articles about it in the Wall Street Journal and Fortune and Business Week. And yet, for some reason, I wonder what the reason might be. For some reason, the cons never own up to it, shall we say. They don't tell you the truth about what's going on. Oh, well. The Tom Hartman Program, where liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from Nashville on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days, with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It's time for another trip into the far, far, far out world of free enterprise. Today, Spaceship Hightower takes you into the often confusing world of food marketing, with Consumer Reports magazine serving as our guide. Let's first probe a new product being promoted under a brand name spelled G-R-A-P-P-L-E. You would naturally pronounce that grapple, as in to wrestle with, but the label instructs us to say grape-l. By whatever name, what is it? An apple. a tortured apple that's been given an artificial grape flavor. The company says the apple is bathed through a patented process, and in a few days the entire apple takes on the essence and mouth-watering taste of Concord grapes. Excuse me? If you want the flavor of grapes, why not buy some? Speaking of buying, the price of 4 grape ales is $3 more than 4 unadulterated apples. Go figure. On to an old favorite, the Hershey chocolate bar. This sweet treat has long been 7 ounces in weight, but Hershey has now quietly reduced it to 6 ounces. You wouldn't notice getting shorted, for Hershey packagers cleverly kept the 6-ounce wrapper the exact same size as the old 7-ouncer. They also kept the price the same. But when it comes to raw chutzpah in the category of product dilution, Hershey is a piker compared to Tropicana and Minute Maid, the two top purveyors of processed orange juice. Both are marketing light versions of their juices, with Tropicana boasting on its carton that light and healthy original has 1/2 less sugar and calories than regular orange juice. What's the trick? Both companies are simply giving you less orange juice, replacing it with water and artificial sweeteners. Yes, they charge you the same for the watered-down version as for the 100% juice. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about the fast-moving world of commercial gotchas, check out ConsumerReports.org.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Electrode Al. Good old Electrode Al. Being discussed in the United States Senate. So far, thanks to, yes, Alberto Gonzalez. Electrode Al. So far, this from the Baltimore Chronicle. This is just a great little summary. The wonders of, you know, what 4 years can bring. What 4 years will bring. By the way, welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com. However you spell it, it'll get you there, is our website. In the last 4 years, these are the following freedoms we have lost. Thanks to Bush and Ashcroft and this whole regime. Freedom of association. This is, you'll find it in the First Amendment. The government may now monitor religious and political institutions without suspecting criminal activity. This is the Patriot Act. Without suspecting criminal activity. Now, here's the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law. I think the Patriot Act is a law. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Your right of free assembly, gone. Freedom of information. Government has closed once public immigration hearings, has secretly detained hundreds, perhaps thousands of people without charges. and has encouraged bureaucrats to resist public records requests. Freedom of speech. Government may prosecute librarians or keepers of any other records if they tell anyone that the government subpoenaed information related to a so-called terror investigation. The right to legal representation. Government may monitor federal prison jailhouse conversations between attorneys and clients and deny lawyers to Americans accused of crimes. You get that? Let's go back to the Bill of Rights. I'm sorry. I hate to be, you know, tedious about this or whatever you, but whatever you call the Sixth Amendment. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation. That's your Miranda rights. And to be confronted with the witnesses against him. And to have compulsory witness process for obtaining witness in his favor. That is, you can call, you can subpoena witnesses to on your in your favor. And to the assistance of counsel for his defense. The Sixth Amendment of the United States, ripped apart by John Ashcroft and George Bush. Freedom from unreasonable searches. Government may search and seize Americans' papers and effects without probable cause to assist terror investigations. In other words, they can do it without proof that there is probable cause of a crime. The Fourth Amendment of the to the Constitution of the United States, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Right to a speedy and public trial. This takes us back to the Sixth Amendment, already read. Governments may search and seize Americans' papers and effect, government may jail Americans indefinitely without a trial. The right to liberty. Remember life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Americans may be jailed without being charged or being able to confront witnesses against them. Which takes us again back to the Fourth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment. This is flat-out insane. Well, the State of the Union is going to be tonight. The State of the Union address. And so let's just look at some of the previous claims, promises, assertions, and comments made by our fearless leader. Claim, if we failed to act in Iraq, the dictator's weapons of mass destruction programs would continue to this day, end quote. Status? Charles Dolfer says, and I quote, this is the guy that Bush paid, I was going to say hundreds of millions of dollars. Dolfer didn't walk away with the money, but spent hundreds of millions of dollars for this guy to track down weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He said, quote, the 1991 Persian Gulf War and subsequent UN inspections destroyed Iraq's illicit weapons capability, and for the most part, Saddam Hussein did not try to rebuild it. According to an intensive report by the chief U.S. weapons inspector in Iraq, Charles Dolfer. In fact, they've given up the hunt now because they've concluded there's definitely nothing there. Ain't nothing there. Okay, here's another claim that George W. made. He said, America is committed to keeping dangerous weapons from dangerous regimes. By the way, this information from the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. Well, under Bush's watch, North Korea's nuclear arsenal is thought to have quadrupled. Charles Pritchard, formerly Colin Powell's top official dealing with North Korea has warned for months that, quote, the White House lacks an effective strategy to dissuade North Korea from building up its nuclear arms. And according to Pritchard, the situation has deteriorated because, quote, the administration has neither offered much of a carrot nor wielded a stick, end quote. According to a Harvard University report titled Securing the Bomb, an Agenda for Action, quote, less fissile material, that's like, you know, stuff that can be made into atomic bombs, were secured in the 2 years after 9/11 than in the 2 years before. In other words, after 9/11, we slowed down the rate at which we were going around the world and saying to particularly the former Soviet states, where they had old, you know, nuclear weapons and construction labs and silos and whatnot. We stopped going to them and saying, we'll buy this stuff from you so that we can dispose of it because we know that you don't have the means to do it. Or we'll pay you to do it. Claim. George W. Bush, the American economy is growing stronger, he says. Status. Job growth over the last 18 months has fallen short of administration predictions of 1,703,000 jobs. More than one-third fewer jobs than Bush's Council of Economic Advisers had said would be created even without tax cuts. The most recent data from the Census Bureau shows that the average income for middle-class households, now keep in mind, millionaires and billionaires are climbing at a rate not seen since the late 1920s. But for middle-class households, the average income since 2000, when George W. Bush, quote, won, end quote, the presidency, has dropped $1,525 per average family. George W. says, the tax relief you passed is working. Yeah. It's working to advance the right-wing agenda, I'll tell you. The tax cuts have drained resources from domestic programs utilized by middle-class families, for sure. The Bush tax cuts for the richest 1% of Americans this year alone will cost $148 billion. Now, just to put that in context, this year's tax cuts for the rich, $148 billion, how much do we spend on all of our Pell Grants that help middle-class and low-income kids go to college, go to state universities? $12 billion. How much do we spend for meals for shut-ins? Almost $2 billion. All of our welfare programs, $16.9 billion. I mean, that's it. I'm sorry, the meals for shut-ins, $180 million, not even $1 billion. On-the-job training, $6.2 billion. But we've got $148 billion to give to the wealthiest among us in tax cuts. Between June 2003 and December 2004, the economy produced 3.1 million fewer jobs than the administration predicted. Claim. This is, again, from one of Bush's previous State of the Union speeches. We are providing more funding for our schools. Well, the bipartisan National Governors Association voted unanimously in 2003 to name No Child Left Behind an unfunded mandate, which means the federal government isn't supplying the money needed to make the law work. That a quote from the Bloomberg News Service on January 12th of this year. For 2005, the administration has requested $9.4 billion less for No Child Left Behind than the bill supposedly ensures. Title I, this is to help poor kids, underfunded by $7.2 billion, leaving 5 million kids without academic help. Another former promise from George W. in one of his State of the Union speeches in the past. I will increase support for community colleges. But last year, the Bush administration proposed cutting the largest direct aid initiative to community colleges, the Perkins program. The Perkins program is for technical and vocational training, from $1.3 billion to $1 billion. Congress had to step in to save the fund. The Republican Congress. Promise made by George W. Bush. Millions of Americans will be able to save money tax-free for their medical expenses in a health savings account. Status. Approximately 440,000 Americans signed up for health savings accounts between December 2003 and September 2005. Here's the bottom line. These things are a joke. These things are just an absolute joke. In fact, let me just pause in this litany because it just goes on and on and on. This from today's newspaper in the Associated Press article by Mark Jewell. Costly illnesses trigger about half of all personal bankruptcies, and health insurance offers no protection against ending up penniless. You get this? This is most of those seeking court protection from creditors had health insurance, with more than three quarters reporting they had coverage at the start of an illness that triggered bankruptcy. Yet half of all bankruptcies in America are because people were driven beyond poverty into absolute debt with insurance by health care costs. 20 minutes before after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Although today I'm famous, tomorrow's just another day. I'll go back to hibernating in that boring groundhog way. Smelling like a groundhog, dreaming groundhog dreams. Even worldwide fame is much more fragile than it seems.
Oh! Yes, it's Groundhog Day. Grow up to be a good groundhog, you get to give a State of the Union address. It's interesting. That the year 2001 is the last year for which there are good statistics available. And that year, 1.46 million personal bankruptcies occurred in the United States. 1,460,000 families shattered. That's more than any year during the Great Depression. Dr. David Himmelstein, the study's lead author and associate professor of medicine. This is a study from Harvard's Law and Medical Schools that's being published this week in the journal Health Affairs. Dr. David Himmelstein says, unless you're Bill Gates, you're just one serious illness away from bankruptcy. I'm quoting here now from the doctor who wrote the lead author. Most of the medically bankrupt were average Americans who happened to get sick. Most of those seeking court protection from creditors had health insurance, with more than three quarters reporting they had coverage at the start of the illness that triggered bankruptcy. Pretty mind-boggling, huh? 54.5%. Medical bankruptcies affect about 2 million Americans each year. It's not just the 1.46 million people who file bankruptcy, but their creditors and or their debtors and their dependents. I'd have to say it's got to be much more than that. You know, and plus 700,000 children, it says. So Bush's answer?
Health savings accounts. Millions of Americans will be able to save money tax-free from their medical expenses in a health savings account.
Yes, the ownership society. You own enough, Bill Gates, you can own society. If you're a multimillionaire like the Bush family, you can own a chunk of society. George Bush says, I will defend the sanctity of marriage. The status, well, efforts to pass a constitutional amendment that would effectively ban same-sex marriage failed in July. I would say beyond that, that that's not how you defend the sanctity of marriage. I mean, we have same-sex marriage here in the People's Republic of Vermont. It's called civil unions, but it's functionally the same thing. And there has not been an epidemic of divorce. In fact, we have one of the lower divorce rates in the nation. If you want to defend the sanctity of marriage, what you want to do is you want to strengthen the middle class, because the leading cause of divorce is not immorality. It's not people fooling around. It's not philandering husbands or desperate housewives. It is financial stress. The leading cause of divorce in America is financial stress. People not making it. People fighting over money. You want to see divorce go down? Build the middle class. But George W. is taking us in the opposite direction from that. He's going to defend the sanctity of marriage. Yeah, right. He says, I will double the federal funding for abstinence programs. Well, sort of he did, but an awful lot of that money went to church groups. Church groups who, by coincidence, mobilized heavily a few months ago to get out the vote for George W. We had over $1 billion. Now, keep in mind, 10 years ago, you know, for the first 200 years of this republic, it was unthinkable that the government would be subsidizing churches. There was this wall of separation, to quote Thomas Jefferson. James Madison's first veto was to veto a bill that would have given federal money to churches to care for the poor. He said this would be a terrible precedent to set. It would destroy the integrity of churches as well as government. Well, my friends, George Bush has set on a path to destroy that integrity by transferring over $1 billion of your tax dollars to churches in the last year. And then going back to those churches and saying, hey, how'd you like to campaign for me? over 80 million voter guides telling us the positions of the candidates on the issues distributed through those same churches. 29 minutes past the hour.
Love rules.
Our son is mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Speaking of the inaugural address,
the lunatics are in my hall.
The proposal that President Bush is putting forth, this is from the Committee on Economic Policy. The proposal that President Bush is using as the basis for his plan phases in cuts over time. A worker who is 45 today can expect to see a cut in guaranteed benefits of around 15%. A worker who is age 35 can expect to see a cut in the guaranteed benefit of approximately 25%. A 25-year-old who is just entering the workforce can expect a benefit cut close to 40%. For a 15-year-old, this cut would mean a loss of close to $160,000 in Social Security benefits over the course of their retirement. Private accounts will allow workers to earn back only a small fraction of this amount. For example, a 15-year-old can expect to make back approximately $50,000 from the $160,000 cut with the earnings on a private account. If this worker retires when the market is in a slump, then it could make their loss even bigger. You think you'll hear about that tonight? Somehow I rather doubt it. What's going to be the next big thing? The absolute next big thing? Newt Gingrich thinks he's got it nailed down. He actually, two things. Number one, he says the next presidential election is going to be fought around the issue of God, which tells me that Rick Santorum is going to be running for president. And on the Republican side, with Jeb Bush as his vice presidential candidate. But and secondly, here's this. Newt says the ownership society, this ownership society, is going to be the next big thing. This is from the Los Angeles Times. Emboldened by their success at the polls, the Bush administration and Republican leaders in Congress believe they have a new opportunity to move the nation away from a system of employer-provided health insurance that has covered most working Americans for the last half century. Now, when you think about it, that's pretty bizarre in and of itself. But it was really sort of an evolutionary process. Nobody had health insurance except the very wealthy, and they simply paid their medical bills. I mean, they self-insured because we didn't have, you know, multi-million dollar illnesses 100 years ago. And then with the rise of labor unions came the rise of the demand for, as a benefit of employment, health insurance. And that led to an employer-sponsored health insurance program. Now, this, frankly, in my opinion, is manifestly unfair to our employers and puts us at a competitive disadvantage with other countries. If I want to start a business in this country of any size and substance, if I want to have more than a few employees and ask people to work full time and be at all reasonable in the marketplace, I have to offer health insurance, which adds to my expenses. Whereas if I hire somebody in India, I don't have to. If I offshore the job to China, I don't have to do that. So not only do the Chinese and the Indians and the Pakistanis and the Vietnamese and the Taiwanese and the on and on it goes, not only do they compete with us in terms of wages, but, you know, if we offshore those jobs, we also don't have to pay for health insurance. Because in all of those countries, the health insurance is paid for collectively by everybody pays for everybody else's health insurance. That is, it's paid for as part of government programs. I can tell you, I studied in a hospital in Beijing, China, 1987. I studied acupuncture at the China International Acupuncture Teaching Hospital in Beijing. I was just incredibly curious, and I had to be in the Philippines, and then there's this long trip that I was taking, and there was this opportunity. They had this 1 month course for physicians that was, you know, basically, it was $267 is my recollection of what it cost. And it was like, you know, $3 a day for room and board, $267 for instruction. And it was a 1 month, like, introduction to acupuncture. Every morning for 4 or 5 hours, we'd sit and, you know, and learn the meridians. Every day was a different meridian and the names of the acupuncture points on the meridians and practice sticking needles into oranges. And then in the afternoon, go out in the wards and you know, walk around, see people being treated with acupuncture. And I thought it was fascinating. So I showed up. You know, I said, I'm not an MD. I'm a psychotherapist. That's about as good as it gets. But they let me in. And people would show up for care. Actually, I would say probably the main thing, the most common thing that we saw in this hospital, there's another allopathic hospital just up the road that took, you know, trauma victims and things. But mostly we were seeing Bell's palsy, neurological disorders. But anyhow, people would show up, and all they had to do was show whatever their ID was. That, you know, hi, here's my name, here's where I live. And they'd mark it off and bill the government. Now, I'm not saying we should use China as our model, but the point is that when we offshore jobs to China, the employers don't have to worry about paying for health care. Employers here in the United States have to. So how do we solve this problem? Well, George W. Bush says solve the problem by forcing the employees to pay for their health care. So only people who are working pay for the health care of everybody. But what about those people who aren't working? Well, screw them. There's 46 million of them right now don't have health insurance. George doesn't hear much from them. They're not showing up on Pennsylvania Avenue with protest signs. Tough luck. Do you think I'm exaggerating? I mean, I'm not. In its place, they want to erect a system in which workers, instead of looking to employers for health insurance, would take personal responsibility for protecting themselves and their families. Elements of that approach, this is an article by Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar in the Los Angeles Times. Elements of that approach have been on the conservative agenda for years. But what has suddenly put it on the fast track is GOP confidence that the political balance of power has changed. Supporters, he says, of the new approach, who see it as part of Bush's ownership society, say workers and their families would become more careful users of health care if they had to pay the bills. Yeah, I can tell you how careful they will become. They won't get preventative care. And so they won't catch illnesses early when they can be treated. And so your overall cost of health care is going to go through the roof because you're going to be getting sicker people later on in later stages of their illnesses. What does Newt Gingrich say about this? Quote, "My view is that this is absolutely the next big thing," end quote. Critics say, notes the Los Angeles Times, "The Republican approach is really an attempt to shift the risks, massive costs, and knotty problems of health care from employers to individuals."
Surprise, surprise.
The Republicans would want to do that. Well, you know, it makes perfect sense. It just makes perfect sense. It's if you're a multimillionaire Republican, a billionaire Republican, you get sick, you can pay for it. It's not a problem. And if you're one of those middle-class Democrats, sorry, guys. This is an email from Jill in Michigan. She says, "Too shy to call in, but how long do you think this can go on? I mean, the way things are going and people not holding anyone responsible, what do you think? Exactly how bad do you think things will have to get before the vast majority's had enough? What is supposed to happen before we finally see the truth of all this? Will we ever again care what the world thinks of us? When will we begin to care about our citizens' health? Will my job ever come back?" She says, "I haven't worked in 3 weeks. It's just a part-time job to do with auto manufacturing, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing in our shop anymore." She says, "Social Security was a true blessing for me 18 years ago when my husband died at 31 and I was pregnant. Now even that may soon change. Back then," she writes, "I was able to work as a pharmacy tech part-time and get excellent insurance benefits for my daughter and myself. My Social Security check, along with working part-time, enabled me to nearly be a full-time mother. I could never have done that in today's world. Just needed to speak out. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring." Thank you, Jill, for speaking out. Well said. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. TomHartmann.com, the website, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Let's go to the phone lines here. Seth in Pittsburgh is on the line. Hey, Seth, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, what about people that are really poor, like minimum wage? You know what I mean? I mean, I can't believe that they expect them to invest for their own retirement, pay for their own health coverage. I mean, it's borderline. And then this with the smokers last week or whatever, it's like borderline Nazism, in my opinion.
Well, it's arrogance elevated to an art form, Seth. It's blindness. I have to cut these guys a little bit of slack. I just have to assume that George W. Bush has never had that blinding moment. I have to tell you just a real quick story that maybe will have something to do with this. There's a guy by the name of Harry Enrique Ruiz Williams. He died about 3 years ago, 2-3 years ago. And I interviewed him about 10 years ago for a book that I was working on that's going to be out actually next year. And Harry Enrique Ruiz Williams, along with another guy by the name of Ernesto Oliva, were the two commanders of the Bay of Pigs invasion into Cuba. And Harry is Cuban and Oliva is African American. And Anyhow, it's without going into a lot of detail. After there was this ceremony in the Orange Bowl down in Florida, where the Kennedy basically, after the Bay of Pigs, you know, Castro took a bunch of guys hostage, a bunch of our, you know, invaders, and he said, "Give me a few million dollars and I'll let these guys free." It was pure and simple a ransom, and Bobby Kennedy ran around and raised the money privately raised the money and gave the money to Castro and got these guys free. And Harry was one of those guys that got freed. And Harry knew Bobby. Harry had known Bobby before. He had been a wealthy businessman in Cuba before that. And Harry told me the story about how him and Bobby Kennedy, they had this thing in the Rose Bowl where they gave the Cuban flag to the Cuban refugees, and they said, "Someday, you know, we'll take Cuba back." And there's this whole big thing, you know, Jack had been down there and all this stuff. And afterwards, they were walking down the street, you know, I think it was in Orlando, and they were, so this was like 1963, 62 or 63. They're walking down the street at maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. And it's Bobby and Harry, and I believe it was Oliva. If it wasn't Oliva, it was another one of these guys who was African American. It was the three of them. And just talking, and they're like, you know, Bobby Kennedy was like dressed like a normal person, you know, I mean, kind of rumpled up at that point. It was the end of a long day. And they decided to go get a cup of coffee and a snack. And so they walk into this diner. And this woman, and they go in and they sit down, and this woman comes over and she turns to Bobby. He's the white guy of the bunch, right? She turns to Bobby Kennedy and she says, "You guys have to leave." Well, actually, she points to the African-American guy and says, "He has to leave." And Bobby says, "Why?" And she says, "Look at the sign." And there's a sign up that says, you know, it has the N-word and says, "No N-word served right here." And Bobby says, "You can't throw us out of here." And she said, "I certainly can." And he said, "I'm the Attorney General of the United States." And she said, "I don't care if you're God. We don't serve those people here. And you're going to have to leave." And he got thrown out of the restaurant. Bobby Kennedy got thrown out of this restaurant. And Harry told me that as they were walking down the street, Bobby was like absolutely enraged and absolutely horrified. It was the first time in his life, apparently. I mean, he'd grown up a millionaire. It was the first time in his life he had come face to face in a real way with what discrimination was like. And that was a turning point for Bobby Kennedy. That was when he really became involved with civil rights. And that led to much of the civil rights legislation that he pushed through with LBJ in the 60s. I.W. Bush has ever had that Bobby Kennedy moment. You know, here's another child of privilege. And I think that probably is true.
Like for his entire life, for anybody's entire life, that they completely don't realize, you know, that how much this is going to hurt someone. I mean, I won't laud them ignorant.
Yeah, well, see, I just can't imagine that they're evil enough that they're doing it out of intelligence. I mean, it's got to be one or the other. Either these guys are absolutely uncaring and unfeeling and just absolutely don't give a damn, number one. Or number two, they believe in a fantasy that has never been demonstrated to work in the history of the world, that if you simply give all the money to the rich people, eventually everything will be fine. Or number three, the guy's been living in a bubble all his life. And I think it's a combination of number two and number three. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Seth, you're convinced that...
I hope you're right. I hope that there's not that many people that cold-hearted and then waving around flags talking about how Christian they are. But, you know, at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't... Well, time will tell. I mean, I'm... Maybe it's just that I have a hard time believing... acknowledging in some level down inside me that anybody could be that callous. But I certainly we've seen evil writ large in the world, and I've seen it face to face in many third world countries all around the world that I've worked in. Maybe it is.
Maybe they have the position that you can't help everyone, so at least a few people can be rich.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's some rationalization there. Seth, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And thanks for listening to us there in Pittsburgh. Social Security can't... And now this is just kicking out. I mean, these guys are just absolutely kicking this thing out like it's a political campaign. It's not... This is another thing that is causing a lot of people to go, well, you know, what's going on here? I mean, if you're just making a case for legislation, if you're just saying, hey, you know, this is really the best thing for America, here's the evidence of it. You don't have to have a campaign. You don't have to, You don't have to convince people, you know, that blue is red. But here we have Laura Meckler writing in today's paper, the Associated Press, all the tactics of a political campaign, TV ads, grassroots organizing, town hall meetings, polling, are being tapped to influence opinion and pressure lawmakers in the explosive debate on Social Security. They're going to spend $100 million before this year is ended on the campaign to convince Americans that we should put our Social Security in the hands of the Wall Street brokers and bankers who are salivating at the possibility of a $900 billion profit. Amazing. 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
The mammoths and mastodons were no match for people and warm weather. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The Earth has gone through numerous ice ages, and the last of them ended about 10,000 years ago. It was followed by a mass extinction of large mammals. Some researchers say human activity and climate change created a 1-2 punch that wiped out the big animals. Anthony Barnosky is a paleontologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He led a team of researchers who tried to determine the causes of the extinctions at the end of the Ice Age.
The bottom line is that we found some parts of the world where you can fairly conclusively demonstrate that it was a climate change that led to certain species going extinct in that part of the world. Other parts of the world where you can fairly conclusively demonstrate that humans had a very major role.
People have long speculated that overhunting led to the extinctions of great creatures such as the mammoths, the saber-toothed cat, and ground sloths. Barnosky says rapid changes in the Earth's climate, in other words, global warming, also put the big animals under stress. And he says human changes to the environment itself were yet another factor. Barnosky says we should pay attention to the events that happened 10,000 years ago. He says our impact on the environment today could lead to the same sort of mass extinctions.
What's going on today is humans disturbing animal habitats by indirect means more than has ever been the case in the past. Plus, our activities have also stimulated climate change, which is outside the rates and magnitudes of what's gone on in the past.
Bernosky's research was published last October in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylor Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
We'll be right back.
seriously exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
Well, time will tell. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Reba in Peachtree City, Georgia. I've driven through Peachtree City, Georgia there, Reba. Hey, welcome to the program.
Gorgeous little town down here. Glad you're doing so good.
It really is. It's a nice suburb, northeast of Atlanta, as I recall.
No, south.
South. Oh, that's right. You're right. I'm
due
sorry.
Due south of Atlanta.
There you go. Yep.
And at one time, Newt Gingrich.
Yes, he used to be my congressman.
Yeah, he used to be our congressman down here.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking the Republican hierarchy have morals?
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you they don't.
No, I remember when he divorced his first wife when she discovered she had cancer, and then he divorced his second wife when she discovered she had MS.
Well, worse than that. It's worse than that because his first wife had to take him to court twice for child support.
Yeah.
They were living in abject poverty out in Carroll County, and she couldn't even get him to pay his child support. And he used to be a Democrat, and he went to the Republican Party because it gave him more money.
Yeah, well, this is Republican values, Reba.
And yeah, I just wanted to correct you on that. Republicans don't have values except when it comes to a dollar.
Well,
I wish it was different.
So do I. I mean, this is the problem, Reba, is that there is this ideology, this belief system that somehow the dollar is what this country was founded on. The democracy and economics are somehow the same thing. And it's just not right. It's just not right. And these conservatives have done such a great job of convincing the average American worker to vote against their own interest, to vote in favor of tax cuts for rich people and leaving them out in the cold and running up huge debts that their children and grandchildren are going to have to pay for, running our country right up against the edge of the wall because they're afraid that the gays are going to get them or something. I mean, it's this divide and conquer has been so destructive to America. And Newt is one of the primary architects of this, Newt and Frank Luntz.
Well, Fayette County is one of the richest parts of this Atlanta area,
mm-hmm.
and it is very red down here.
Yeah.
But the trouble is that they have their $10 million churches.
Yeah.
But they don't want the kids from the trailer park going to their school, and they don't want the kids from the trailer park going to their church.
Well, and this is where you get into the whole thing of choice for schools. It's another way of supporting church-run schools. There's just this. I mean, I find it just amazing that $1 billion was given to churches last year, and nobody has put two and two together and said, hey, could this be one of the reasons why the churches passed out 80 million voter guides in 2004 that made the Democrats look like godless communist killers and made the Republicans look like saints? And you saw this turnout of people coming from the churches, and an awful lot of it went to African American churches, where support for the president doubled this year over 4 years ago, as a result of this all this money going into it.
Well, they're going to learn soon, I hope.
Yeah. Well,
I'm staying Democrat. I'm not changing.
There you go.
I'd rather fight than switch down here in Georgia.
There you go, Reba. Thanks for the call. It's great, great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent, as they say, but boy, it just makes me cringe the way some of this stuff is being done. Anyhow, it's a Tom Hartman radio program where being progressive never felt so good. The free, true free speech zone. See you tonight on the State of the Reich speech. Check it out. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Rama will, actually. He'll be here.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing. And